Good Sunday morning. My name is Josh McCarthy with WOKV, and I want to welcome you to another edition of our Ask the Experts weekend. And on this Sunday morning, we have a very special guest. Unfortunately, Pete the Job Guy is as busy as always, and he's out there doing Pete the Job Guy things. Who knows what that is, innovating the people of today and tomorrow, always talking to Jacksonville's most influential individuals. And when he's out and about, there's always one name he calls. Only one person can fill in for Pete the Job Guy. And I want to welcome you today, Lori. What I have in the studio today is, of course, Lori Day. And she is the Director of Client Strategy and Development at CGI, and also a newly fine print here, the newly appointed Commissioner for the Florida Commission on the Status of Women. Welcome and congratulations, Lori.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. And good morning, all of you hard workers. It is a fine Sunday morning. I want to welcome you to the Hard Worker Radio Show. As Josh said, easier said than done on an early Sunday morning, I am Lori Day, your regular takeover host. And I have the pleasure of being here, yes, when Pete does, well, whatever it is he does. So I wonder what that is today. We should ping him by email and just ask him. Before we jump in, I also want to take a moment to shout out to a couple of the other folks here with me in the studio today. We have Zane Beverly, intern working with Pete the Job Guy. Zane is a senior at UNF and offers perspective on the workforce of tomorrow. And, of course, our phenomenal WOKV producer, Josh McCarthy, makes radio magic happen. So thank you. Glad you guys are with us today, and you'll get a chance to meet my awesome guest in a moment. But as Josh said, this show is dedicated to the workforce of today and tomorrow. In fact, some of this content comes directly from you. So if you have a question or a topic that you'd like to hear Pete and his guest talk about, give him an email. You can do that at pete@petethejobguy.com. Or if you want even some personal advice, he'd welcome that email as well. Who knows, your idea or topic could spark a whole episode. Each week, this show brings to you the top most influential experts that share their tips and experiences to help you today and for tomorrow. And this week is no different. My guest, Barb Morgan, is EVP and Chief Technology Officer at FIS, certainly fills the description that I just mentioned to a T. And here at the radio show, Pete the Job Guy would say, we like to focus on feed forward instead of feedback, because we bring experts that share their advice, share their experiences with you to hopefully help you avoid some pitfalls, but also be proactive about how you can take control of your career and move it forward. So first of all, what I've got to say is congratulations. You are a winner. Our listeners, you're a winner. No, Ed McMahon or whoever he was is not going to knock on your door, but you are a winner because you woke up this morning. You didn't sleep in. You could do a million other things, but you're here investing in you. So you decided to get up, get sharp, and get ready to get some information to help you be your best ever. So for that, you win. Yay. So today, as I mentioned, we're going to be talking with Barb about her career and her journey in the field of STEM. And in honor of Women's History Month, we're going to talk specifically about women in STEM. So for now, we think about STEM. There are lots of them around us. There's stems, there's blooms, there are sprouts all around. Because guess what? Spring has sprung. And so this time of year tends us to think about spring cleaning. And we want to get things spruced up, since the winter doldrums are behind us. So whether you need to tidy up your home or your office or your head, for that matter, here's a little advice. The lean process engineering tool called 5S is an amazing tool. And I want to tell you a little bit about that today. And if you have a pencil and a piece of paper, old school, or your phone, and you can have your phone, your thumbs ready and handy to take some notes, you might enjoy this. One of the things that I love about all lean tools is they started in the manufacturing environment but are applicable across the board. They're even applicable at home. My family will tell you that, yes, indeed, when you get introduced and embrace lean tools, you are ruined for good for life. So let's talk a little bit about 5S. Like the amazing tools that I mentioned from Lean, this one is simply named 5S because there are 5 steps. And guess what? Each word that those steps correlate to starts with, anybody? S. Yes. Brilliant. Right. So simple. So the 5 S's are a way that you can organize. And it's really was designed originally in the Toyota system, again, in the manufacturing environment, to help make things efficient, to make things easy to find, and also increase quality and safety while increasing performance. So that sounds like a pretty good thing, but that can be applied everywhere. And so when we think about this, I encourage you to think about where might there be a way that would be helpful for you to be faster, more efficient, less risk, you know, maybe avoid some injury if you're tripping over stuff that's in the way or whatever that might be, or help make your business systems even work better. So let's break it down. The 5 S's, pretty simple. The first one is S for sort, and that's our organized step. And what you do there is you eliminate whatever's not needed by separating the stuff you want to keep or that's needed from the stuff you no longer need. And so think about old paper reports, perhaps electronic files that are draft versions or multiple ways that you've saved that are clogging up your inbox. Maybe personnel records for people who've moved into new roles. Maybe that stack of filing that you've been meaning to get to for the last X long, maybe you really don't even need that anymore. So ask yourself, why are you keeping something? Is it available somewhere else? Have you used it in the last 6 months, or will you use it again in the next 6 months? And where there's a specific need, then perhaps that's something that you want to keep. So we've sorted out the things we want to hold on to, and we've also made a decision of things we don't want to. I kind of think about 5 S's, Marie Kondo on steroids, right? So definitely we're going to ask, is this bring you joy? But there's some system to this as well that leads you into some really good business process. So step 1, complete. Check. We've eliminated the things we don't need. The second step is set. Set in order. And that's our orderliness step. And that's where we organize whatever remains in good categories by neatly arranging them, identify them as, you know, common parts. And if you label them, a tip would be label them something with characteristics that you're going to know what it is down the road. So, for example, I used to have a box in my Outlook that said to be read. And so I would slide all that stuff that I needed to read into that to be read file. Well, that just became another junk file. And so that wasn't necessarily helpful. When I changed that to complete by Friday, then that was looking at me all week and I knew I had to complete by Friday. So that was a little bit more helpful. So I would encourage you to think about folders, alphabetization, if that's a word, I don't know. I'm not sure. But it is now. I just made it up. Subcategories or groupings. So all of those things are ways that you can set things in order. So now we've got the things we need. They're in a good order. The next step is shine. And that's our cleanliness step. And that is around cleaning the work area by conducting a cleanup campaign. So this creates a sense of pride and accomplishment. And even if you think about something as simple as your in-mail box or your inbox for your Outlook, if it doesn't have a whole bunch of little numbers that tell you how many unread emails you've failed to address, you know, those are things of clutter. So organize it, clean it. If it's something more physical or tangible, dust it, sanitize it. Oh my goodness, we are in the midst of the coronavirus, right? So sanitize everything. We've got these little hankies over our microphones today in the spirit of cleanliness. But seriously, when you clean things up and you shine it, it does bring joy back in the process. So we've now done those first 3 steps, and the 4th one is to standardize our cleaning schedule and our routine around organization. So we've done this, but if we don't ever do this again, then we're going to end up with that big pile or that big audacious task. But if we have a standardized routine, we schedule and take time to do it, then we are starting that process and it's not overwhelming. So there you go. But wait a minute, there's 5, right? Yes, there is a 5th one. The 5th S is sustain, and that is really our discipline step. And it's the hardest, but the most important one, because then it gives you the discipline of doing those steps over and over in a routine that helps you keep the continuous process improvement in front of you, but also creates the best way to manage all of those things that are coming your way. So there it is for you hard workers. If you put a little 5S into your routine, you'll not only be a hard worker, but you'll be a smart, safe, and efficient worker. So that's your tip for the day. And now it's time to hear from Angie Staffing.
What's up, Jacksonville? Angie here, president of Angie Staffing. If you're finding it harder and harder to find the right candidates, or your ads are letting you down, call me, Angie Staffing, 904-703-8880. I have over 20 years of experience right here in Jacksonville. I can help with anything, accounting, finance, legal, even that one position that's impossible to fill. Angie Staffing, 904-703-8880. We're bringing back the hustle.
That was Angie from Angie Staffing. Quick update, Angie Staffing was recently acquired by Ascendo Resources. And the great news, Angie is the managing partner of Ascendo Resources, and she's definitely bringing back the hustle. So you're back with us at Pete the Job Guy, and I'm your favorite guest host, Lori Day, and we are delighted to have you here with us this morning, and I'm so excited for you to meet Barb Morgan. She's my guest today, and she is part of the executive team at FIS. She is the chief technology officer and leads the entire banking platform delivered to everything from community banks to the major mega banks. And in her role, she has leadership responsibilities that span the breadth of all of those solutions, including next generation banking and lending to modern payments. Barb has worked diligently to empower a highly diverse workforce. We love that, fostering innovative thinking, collaboration, and continuous learning. Barb has been with other companies prior to FIS and led very significant roles in IT for Capital One, EDS, AIS, Boeing, and Lucent Technology. But her passions go beyond her workforce. She's also chairman of the board of LLS, which is the Lymphoma and Leukemia Society. She serves as the corporate advisory board of directors for the Milwaukee School of Engineering and is an advocate for Women in Technology International and STEM. She was recently named IT Executive of the Year by the International Business Awards, the Most Innovative Woman of the Year by the Woman in Business Awards, and the Jacksonville Business Journal's Women of Influence honoree in 2019. This is an amazing superstar leading the way for not only her company, but all of the others that are up-and-comers in the world of technology. Thank you, Barb, for being here. So excited to have you.
No, I'm so excited to be here. This is going to be fun.
So tell us a little bit about your role and how you got there. Give us a little background and then tell us, you know, kind of what's the day in a life with Barb.
Yeah, so I'll take it back to the beginning and you know, kind of try to fast forward through some of it. So I actually, when I started school, I had no clue what I wanted to be. And you know, I had started college relatively young and kind of a cool opportunity. And so I kind of went from college to college taking classes. So I would take a bunch of science classes and then I would go over and take a lot of poli-sci classes. And finally, my parents said, hey, like, you probably need to figure out what you want to do. So I sat down with the counselor and she said, you need math. And I said, okay. So I did what I had done and I went and I took a ton of math classes together. You weren't supposed to. I'm aging myself. The systems, you know, recommended, but they didn't stop me. So I took algebra and trig and calc 1 differential equations all in one semester.
Oh, my goodness.
And I absolutely fell in love. So I go running back to the counselor. I was like, oh, my gosh, I know what I want to be. I want to do math. And she said, oh, honey, girls don't do math.
Oh.
And so in that moment, I knew exactly what I was going to do. I was going to do math. And so I actually was a math major until my senior year. I became a computer science major with a math minor and so graduated with my computer science. And, you know, for me, it was at a really unique time when, you know, computers were changing. Computer science really focused on kind of the foundational platform, the math based mm-hmm. platform of programming. So it, you know, really intrigued me from that perspective. But at the same time, you were getting to build really cool new stuff. And so that's how I actually started in my career. And I went into the telecom industry at first. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was a unique opportunity. You know, when I look through the different places that I've been, I started in telecom, then I did aerospace engineering, then I did oil and gas, then I went into healthcare, and then I found myself in financial services. And so what I found over my career is, agnostic of industry, the same issues exist, whether you're talking about the diversity of the workforce, whether you're talking about the challenges that people face. You know, when you're looking at what clients need and what they want, agnostic of industry, you find very similar patterns across. And so it served me well to, you know, kind of go across those different industries. And I started with my fingers on the keyboards and kind of worked my way up. And I did everything from, you know, programming to database to network. And then I really found my passion around people. I think that technologists are a unique set of individuals of their own. You know, you don't typically pick a computer because you like to talk to people. And so, you know, just understanding how they think, we look at diversity from a lot of lenses. So we look at introverts, extroverts, creators, thinkers as a diversity factor, along with your traditional diversity factors, whether it's gender or race or, you know, whether it's different. You know, as we're a global company, we have to look at the differences between geographies. Mm-hmm. And so we take all of those components into, you know, kind of factor when we look at diversity.
That's fantastic. I love the idea of challenging not only the thought process around what is normal, right? And you take that all the way back to the challenge that you were given. So listeners, I know you can tell even already, we've just started, that not only is Barb smart, but she's brave. And those are really great attributes of a leader and a great role model. So I can't wait to talk a little bit more about that. But is there one thing, if you could think of, that you wish you would have known, that you know now, that you wish you would have known when you got started?
Yeah, I think, you know, I spent, it was probably about 10 years into my career that I realized a very valuable life lesson. You know, as you're little and you're growing up, you're always told, treat others as you would like to be treated. And what I found was, it's really more about treating others as they would like to be treated. And you have to know people in order to do that. So when you look at what drives a person, what drives me is going to be completely different than what drives you. Mm-hmm. And so you have to get to know people, and really, you know, understanding that really changed my lens from being able to be a manager to being able to be a leader. And I think as a leader, you really pull the best out of people, and you do that by really knowing who they are.
That is very true, because one size doesn't fit all.
Right.
Different things motivate different people in different ways. As easy as what we might think is recognition, there's a variety of different forms of recognition, and some people might be very comfortable with the spotlight and the limelight. Others would much prefer a note where it's just a personal, private thing, but they know that they're being affirmed. So talk to me about mentors and sponsors. Have you had those in your career path, and have you been a mentor sponsor for others? What is that like for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I still have mentors that go back, you know, 2-3 careers ago, right? Different companies and things like that. And what I found is, you have to find, you know, you have to know yourself first and understand what are your weaknesses, what are your blind spots, and then find mentors that complement those, that that are willing to be honest with you and really, you know, help you face those challenges and look at things differently. For instance, I have a great mentor that, you know, I still pull back on, that gives me a lens from a very financial perspective. So I'm not, you know, math and accounting are definitely two different things in my mind.
Yep.
And so learning to speak accounting or learning to speak CFO was something that has been work for me. And mm-hmm. so I found a mentor that was very good at that, very good at translating the value that technology brings into kind of more of a return on investment traditional model, and being able to, you know, show those things. And so, you know, that's one example of a mentor that I use to, you know, help me look at things differently and mm-hmm. look at things the way that, you know, maybe my internal clients are needing to see things. As far as mentoring people, it's one of my favorite things. There's a variety of ways that we do that, both, you know, within the company, but then there's a lot of places, you know, within LinkedIn, they have a mentor program that I've participated in where I actually mentor people globally. And they can write in their topic, they'll pair you up with someone. And sometimes those are a one-time, you know, informational session where you spend an hour or two. Sometimes they're 3 months, 6 months. So you can have short-term and long-term mentors. And I think it's important to find those depending on what it is, the challenge that you're facing.
Well, that's brilliant. I think for our listeners out there, we encourage a lot of activity in your social media platforms. LinkedIn, certainly known as the workforce platform. So if you haven't explored the opportunity to be mentored or to be a mentor, I encourage you to do that. So I kind of hear the hustle music. It's the music that tells us it's the bottom of the hour and time for our break. So you're listening to Hard Worker with Pete the Job Guy on News 104.5 WOKV. Do the hustle. Welcome back, Hard Workers. You are listening to Hard Worker with Pete the Job Guy on 104.5 WOKV. And if you just joined us, I am not Pete the Job Guy. I'm Lori Day, your guest host for today while Pete is doing his thing. Yeah, so we are going to kick off our second half of the show, and we're going to start with some advice from Coach Larry. He always has great tips and perspective, and today is no exception.
When I first became a leader, I thought that my role was to have all the answers and be the tiebreaker when the team couldn't make a decision. It wasn't until I learned how to be a leader as coach did I truly learn what it meant to lead. Today, I'm going to share with you 5 misconceptions about being a leader as coach. And this comes from the book Leader as Coach from Daniel Peterson and Mary D. Hicks, both of whom are PhDs. So they have that going for them. Misconception number 1, coaching takes a lot of time. Yes, it does. Well, I guess that isn't a misconception then, is it? It does take time in the short run, but in the long run, it saves time. How much time a day do you spend answering other people's questions? How about answering emails? Sending emails? Let's say that it's at least 2 hours a day, just to be conservative. If you are like most people, it feels good to be needed. It feels good to answer those questions. If it doesn't feel good to be needed, then I think you have some other issues. Coaching is not about answering other people's questions. Coaching is about helping people develop their own capabilities, answer their own questions. Coaching builds team capacity. Imagine if you had a team full of highly developed performers. Chances are you would be spending those 2 hours on coaching and leading as opposed to answering questions that other people should know the answer to already. Misconception number 2. Coaching is about fixing problem behaviors. Yes, it is. Again, not quite a misconception, but coaching is about so much more. It's true. We need to coach people who are not performing. We need to help them figure out why and get them on the right track. But what about your top performers? If we ignore our top performers or simply keep leaning more and more on them, then they're going to become disengaged and even quit. The question for coaches when it comes to top performers is, how can you coach them so that they can become even greater versions of who they are and become even more effective? You will get a lot of bang for the coaching buck when you help people utilize their strengths to the full potential. Misconception number 3, coaching means giving feedback and advice. If I told you, you know, you shouldn't eat that, or you should run every morning like my friend Pete does, how does that land on you? Probably not very well. Nobody likes to be told what to do, especially when that other person is right. Coaching is about asking questions so people can learn something new about themselves and identify their most important action steps. It's far more powerful than giving some advice. Advice is easy. Getting insight through questioning is not. Misconception number 4. Coaching is the same as mentoring. Well, coaching would be called mentoring if it were the same, wouldn't it? Well, mentors tend to share their experiences, their network. They leverage the organization to help the person in their careers. Coaches don't need to have all those experiences in the same industry, roles, or organizations that a mentor does. Coaches should be experts at coaching, however. My friend Greg Thompson, and president of Blue Point Leadership Development, says, "I'm not a surgeon, but I can coach surgeons. I cannot, however, mentor them because I haven't been a surgeon." Misconception number 5, coaching is just a fad. Leaders play many different roles. They set goals. They delegate. They give advice, give feedback. They do performance reviews. They communicate, communicate, and communicate. According to Deloitte, more than any other leadership tool in the leader's toolkit, coaching has the greatest impact on employee engagement and employee productivity. Why? Because coaching is about helping people find their way to becoming the person or the employee they are capable of becoming. Harvard asked hundreds of retired CEOs what they are most proud of about their career. The most common answer given was developing the people who reported to them. It wasn't taking the stock from 10 to 1,000 or creating amazing products or amazing clients. It was that they developed amazing leaders in the organization. That was their legacy. So you might be thinking, how do I become a leader coach? How do I help others become a leader coach? At Mendoza and O'Brien, we offer virtual and in-person workshops on becoming a leader coach. And through my experience, I've discovered that coaching is not one of those things that you can learn by reading a book, although I suggest you read a coaching book. But coaching is learned by taking training, practicing coaching, and getting feedback. And we do all three of those in our Leader as Coach workshop. So please reach out to me if you are interested in bringing one of our workshops to your organizations. And for more information and a description of our workshops, go to www.mendozaandobrien.com.
Thank you, Larry. And if you've just tuned in, we are talking with my amazing guest today, Barb Morgan. She's a Chief Technology Officer at FIS. And we're here talking about all things technology, and in particular, women in technology. I mentioned in the monologue up front that we're going to talk about STEM. And, you know, many people understand what that acronym is, but I think it's probably helpful if we just spell it out, because there's many facets. And for those that are up and coming in their career who may want to shift and refine and adjust, STEM is really science, technology, engineering, and math. All of those different disciplines can work together, but they can also be their own individual path. And one of the STEM legends of our time and our history is a woman named Katherine Johnson. She just passed away at the wonderful age of 101, of all things. And we celebrate her life and her contribution to history and for women in STEM. Katherine helped NASA put an astronaut into orbit and also helped put a man on the moon. She was called a computer, because back in 1950, there were no computers, not like we have today. People had to solve hard math problems, like what's the angle to land on the moon? Really? Like, just blows your mind. But so people had to use adding machines and rulers and stuff like that, that I know for all of the young folks that are part of our listening audience may not recognize those, but they did. So what NASA did back then is they hired women to be computers. And if you haven't seen the movie Hidden Figures, just do it. It's amazing. So just, again, recognizing Katherine Johnson as part of our women's history, and also now current day STEM legend we have with us is Barb Morgan. So I want to talk a little bit about that. Barb, so when you think about, you said that math was something you just fell in love with, and then so you evolved from math. You're part of the board of the Milwaukee School of Engineering. Clearly your role in technology is super diverse and important. So, you know, you've really encompassed all of that. And I just was curious, if there's a common myth, maybe it's what your guidance counselor shared with you, which kind of horrified me, but the common myth about women and technology, and can you debunk it?
Yeah, you know, oftentimes, whether it's girls at a young age through activities that they're you know, really pushed to participate in, or whether it's through the way that learning is taught, there's this unfounded that girls can't do math. And the reality is that, you know, when you look at genders and you look at the way that people learn, there is differences in just, you know, the common understanding, the common way that people learn. And the way that math is taught at a very young age is actually geared more towards the way that young boys tend to learn.
Interesting.
And so it often does, you know, kind of move the girls out of the math courses very early on. And then when you get into the later phases of math, it actually tends to complement the way that girls learn. And so, but by that point, you've already lost many of the female participants. And we refer to it often as the leaky pipeline. So, you know, whether you look at it through school, through the younger ages up through high school, and then you start to get into college, when you look at our graduating stats, it's really very sad to see. So the latest stat that I saw had 17.3% of engineering students are female. And so you're already starting with such a small population of your engineering new to the workforce as female, you know, participants. And then as you go through, females tend to be better at, they tend to be more of the extroverts. So within the population of the engineering community, you find a lot of introverts. The females tend to be the extroverts. They can communicate a technology problem to, you know, a business person or to a finance person or to a product. You know, they can talk in multifacets. And so what ends up happening a lot of times, and like I said, we refer to it as the leaky pipeline, is they will appear as rock stars, and they'll actually get pulled into business roles or they'll get pulled into product roles and get pulled out of the engineering field somewhere in the first 5 years of their career. So then as you continue to progress the career, the percentage of females just continues to get more narrow as you go up. And so it's a challenge that we're constantly facing. You know, we do tackle it. We go into the schools, we participate, really trying to accelerate that learning there. We've, as a company, we've partnered with the Georgia School Systems to really get a fintech program in place.
Awesome.
I've participated in speaking with different colleges and universities. I was actually at UNF gosh, I guess it was about a month ago. UNF, but speaking with the computer engineering students there and just talking to them about challenges that I've faced throughout my career. But I think a lot of it is, you know, throughout the process, we have to figure out how to infuse additional talent in that space. And so one of the things that we've looked at is how do you, you know, as the world has gone from whether, you know, it was waterfall traditionally, then it went into kind of the lean model, and now you're seeing the agile model persist and be the progressive forward-looking as you look at the fourth industrial revolution and how work is done. And so there's a role in there called Scrum Master, and what we found is we've been able to partner with mothers returning to the workforce. They make phenomenal Scrum Masters. They don't have to have a really strong technical background. They have, you know, they have the aptitude and ability to learn, and so we've been able to partner and give them the technical skills necessary to come in, and so that's allowed us to infuse talent there. We've also done some programs where we look at whether it's, you know, implementations, client relations, areas like that that know our business very well. How can we infuse talent into our workforce, whether it's through COBOL boot camps, designer boot camps, things like that, that actually get them into more of a programming forward-looking role, and really just understanding how do we continue to infuse talent in the middle of the pipeline? Because there's a lot of work being done and needs to continue to be done. Like I said, I just, you know, talked about the stat of our engineering. So we have to infuse in the elementary, we have to infuse in high school and through the colleges. And then there's a lot of focus right now when you look at companies and you look at boards and you look at executive leadership being put in that spotlight on women. But how do we infuse in that middle layer? And so we have a real focus on that as well, because that's a problem as much as it is, you know, throughout the pipeline.
Well, and you hit on so many just really important points. And I think in the Northeast Florida community as a whole, when we think about talent and bringing a vibrant workforce to our market and our community, being able to have ways in which all levels of entry, if you will, whether right. it's just out of college or if it's someone on ramping back into a career mm-hmm. or someone who wants to do maybe even part-time project work, being able to set up systems that help. And as we see things that are coming into our world day in, day out, are technology driven. They either help us be safer, they help us communicate better. That could be debatable, I guess. but it's just those kind of things. And if we think about not having equity of women in those innovation sessions, we're kind of missing a big part of the user group, right? Yeah. So you kind of, I think about when airbags were first developed, they were developed by men engineers, and it was great. But it wasn't sufficient for petite women or children. And so until women came into that design model. So I think you bring some really great pieces and parts. So one of the things I know you're really passionate about is giving back in a variety of places, not just at work and the people who serve that you serve and they serve you, but in the community. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about some of the things that are important to you.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, everyone has to find what their passion is around, right? And I think that for me, I've been very blessed or lucky throughout my life to have a lot of really great opportunities come my way. And there's a lot of people who don't have those opportunities, whether it's for health reasons, which has led me to give back to the LLS Society, and I have, you know, a lot of personal reasons around that, from people that have worked for me, people that have been inflicted. Blood cancer seemed to touch everyone's lives in some form or fashion. And so that was really important to me. And also giving back from the technology front and, you know, whether it's going into the schools or mentoring or things like that. I just feel that I've had a lot of people who've positively influenced me. And so I think that it's a great opportunity for me to give back as well.
That's awesome. So what's one tip of advice that you would give to a young woman out there listening today who's wondering whether or not a career in STEM is the important thing to do?
Well, number one, it is. So I think the thing that I would tell you is you're going to hit hurdles and you're going to hit roadblocks and just push through them. Be brave. There's going to be times that you're looking at how do they not understand what I'm saying, and you just need to go back to your toolkit and think, what is the impact that I'm trying to convey, and go back and just keep pushing on. There have often been times that I've ran into challenges and things like that I've just had to push through, and I think that, you know, with perseverance, you'll find your way out on top.
Awesome. I want to have a little bit of fun with you in our last couple of minutes before yes. we bring in our Boston Danny for us. But let's do a quick lightning round of one word or phrase that answers these questions. All right, you ready?
Oh, boy. Let's go.
Your biggest pet peeve?
Negativity.
Awesome. Favorite personal escape?
The beach.
Do you like dogs or cats?
Neither.
If you had $1 million, what would you buy first?
A bookstore.
Awesome. Who's your superhero?
Mighty Mouse.
Awesome. All right, there it is. You've had it. You could have slept in, listeners, but you didn't. You didn't mow the lawn. You didn't do a number of other things. You invested in you. And the difference between working hard and hardly working is taking time to invest in yourself. So thank you for being here, Barb. You've been an amazing guest for inspiring us. I hope you pulled away some really great nuggets. And the show wouldn't be the show without some shout outs and inspiration from none other than Boston Danny.
Hello, Jacksonville. Danny here, coming to you with the Northern Update. Well, you know, like I've been talking about, the weather's been turning for us. It's been getting warmer out here, but, you know, it gets a little crazy. It hits 50 degrees around here, and, you know, everyone's wearing shorts and T-shirts, and gets to be a little bit like it's a party going on. But we love it up here. We know we still get a couple more months of some little bit colder temperatures, you know, until we get to where it's, Florida status. But, you know, we're doing it. We're loving it. We're looking forward to springtime up here. You know, I thought it would be a worse winter than what we had, but we were pretty fortunate. You know, I'm not saying I don't miss it, but, you know, I always know it's there in the back of my mind, so we get it going there. So on the home front, everything's rolling right along here. My grandson Desmond, he just had his, he just turned 9 months. And it's amazing to just see how aware and how loving that he's gotten. So it's been a real joy for Cheryl and I just to watch him get a little bit bigger. If I could freeze him at this age, I think I might, because I know what's coming. Poor Jessica and Chris, my son-in-law, they're clueless, but that's the way we all should be. But he's getting bigger and everything's going good there. They just took a trip out to San Diego. They had a good time. They went out and saw Chris's mom. So she got to see Desmond and get the full thing. So I'm glad they got the trip in to before all this craziness started, which brings me to the coronavirus, folks. Hope everyone is going to be okay with it. I feel we're going to be all right. We just got to listen to the government and, take our precautions and just, be human towards one another so that everything happens, Share the toilet paper. I know they're canceling all the sports venues and all that stuff. I just look at it on the bright side because the NFL's over now. If the NHL is over now, the Boston Bruins have the most points. I guess that means we have the cup. It's just too bad we can't, run it down Boylston Street and have a duck boat parade again. But, folks, it's a serious business. I hope everyone takes precautions and we all come out through with it. But it still doesn't stop us from giving our happy birthday shout-outs. I want you guys to get them in to Peter so we can mangle them up for you. And I wish everyone a wicked pisser birthday. I got a couple for... I got one for Jim Riss and for Holly Blanton. Remember what I say, guys. Do something nice for yourself. Plan it out right because it's your birthday. And that's why we do it. And I want to wish a very special wicked pisser birthday to our own Lindy Langlois. She turned 16. She's got everything in front of her. She's a great kid. Lindy, have a very special day. That's from everybody. And, make sure your dad does it right. He only turned 16 once. So, take him for what he's worth. And as always, folks, remember our first responders, our peacekeepers, and our military men and women. I have a feeling they're going to be pretty busy in the next coming weeks. So everyone just stay human. And Jacksonville, brothers and sisters, I'll be talking to you. Talk to you next week.
All of our listeners are excited to always hear from Zane Beverly. He's our intern working with Pete the Job Guy. Zane is a senior at UNF and offers perspective for the workforce of tomorrow.
Hey, Lori, it's great to be here. It's great to be actually in the studio this week. I was sick last week, so I didn't show up. And that's what we're going to be talking about. Not showing up to work if you're sick. Sick days are important. You need to use them. We talked about respecting your coworkers a few weeks ago, and this is another way you can respect your coworkers is by not showing up to work sick and infecting them. There's a thing called sick shaming that I've been reading up about where your healthy coworkers, if you show up sick, your healthy coworkers, sometimes it's growing a lot recently, will follow you around, make comments, try to persuade you to go home because they don't want to get sick themselves. 100%. I'm getting a lot of smiles in the studio right now. They've seen it. It's extremely important, if you're sick, to talk to your boss, make sure that you can stay home and recover. Maybe work out a way that you can stay home and work from home if your job allows it, but just don't come into work unless you 100% have to, because you got to look out for yourself and the people around you. There's a thing recently I've been reading up, the BBC was talking about presenteeism, the opposite of absenteeism, where people are showing up more and more and more when they're sick to their jobs. And it has things to do with bad workplace cultures of bosses and managers not really allowing people to take sick days, or they're shaming them into not taking their sick days. It's coming into things like workers are wanting to be the star athletes of the office and show that they're going 110% through hell or high water, going to show up no matter what, even if they're sick. But it's not good. It's not the right thing to do. You need to stay home if you're sick, and you got to take those sick days.
Awesome. Thank you, Zane. And this is a great time of year to be thinking about staying away if you're not well.
It was a little topical is the reason I picked this one.
Perfect. That's what we love about you, Zane.
Thank you very much.
You're always right on the money. So I'm glad you're feeling better. I'm glad you're back.
Very better.
I'm glad you have your hand sanitizer.
Always.
All that good stuff. Well, hard workers, thanks for making us part of your day. If you missed any part of this broadcast and you'd like to hear it in its entirety or hear it again, great stuff today. No problem. The podcast will be available Monday afternoon at www. That's hard to say. PeteTheJobGuy.com. And Pete, we'll be back next week, and I look forward to being your guest again sometime soon. I hope you learned a few things, had a few laughs. Get ready and get out there. You've just listened to Hard Worker with Pete the Job Guy, WOKV.